Kelly Clarkson here to let you know it's the holidays at Wayfair, and I'm so excited to share how you can add a little extra magic to your celebrations this season. I love this time of year, y'all. It's always filled with friends and family around the dinner table, holiday traditions, and my favorite, cozy time spent at home. Hosting is such a big thing during the holidays, and Wayfair has the perfect pieces to make your holiday celebrations even more festive and totally your style. To get the holiday Christmas spirit going at my house, we love watching some fun classic Christmas movies, baking in the kitchen together, having some holiday music on. It just makes everything more magical. One thing I love about Wayfair is they have so many options, because each year we like to do something a little different. Look, everyone knows no matter how much preparation you go in for Christmas time, it's so busy. So the free, easy delivery that Wayfair provides is something I really love. No matter your space, style, or budget, shop Wayfair.com to get your home holiday ready.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
Welcome to the Hypothalamic Amenorrhea Podcast. I'm Dani Sheriff, your host, certified fertility awareness practitioner, functional nutrition counselor, and founder of the HA Society, and of course, an HA recovery coach who has walked where you currently are walking. This is the place to come if you care about getting your period regularly. This podcast aims to educate, inform, and keep you motivated on your period and HA recovery track. So let's dive in. But last thing, nothing on the show should be taken as medical advice, so please seek the advice of your physician. The Holistic AJ Practitioner Certification is open for enrollment right now, so October 14 through 18, meaning if turning your mess into your message and creating a career or adding recovery coaching to your existing health practice sounds like a path that you want to take, this is going to be the certification for you. It is an accredited course and the only certification specifically for HA coaches and practitioners. In our program, Ashley and I have laid out our entire framework for working with women with hypothalamic amenorrhea. We're teaching you everything from the physiology to the intake process to the guide and recommendation development to how to track progress in recovery and how to make adjustments all throughout your time working with a client. All of that is the key. Those are your most tactical tools that you need. But then we're also teaching you the soft skills that you need to get buy-in from your clients so that they can actually make the meaningful changes that are necessary to recover for life. So signing up early means, you know, within the first 48 hours, which ends at midnight on Tuesday the 15th, by sending your application in early. That means you can get the early bird discounts and bonuses. So there's a discount, there's a bonus. All of it is, all that information is available on the website. So holisticajpractitioner.com. And if you have any questions, you and I can email about it. So just go to our website, get our contact details. I'm happy to discuss if the course is right for you. It is definitely competitively priced against other women's health certifications, but I'm telling you, we've put everything into it and it is definitely up there with one of the best trainings that you guys will ever do that will help you in the future work with any and all women. So that's holistichapractitioner.com. Sign up now. Enrollment is open now and we'll see you guys there. Enjoy the show. Hey guys, welcome back to the AJ Podcast. Today, recovery story. Exciting one. Another one that I haven't heard the full story. And I love these, like living them for the first time, because Lucy is joining us. She was not my client, but she is or has been a member of the HAP certification. So that's where I met her and learned about her. And was like, oh, I need the whole story. So Lucy, welcome to the show. Will you please introduce yourself a bit, who you are, where you're from, all that good stuff?
Okay, well, firstly, thank you, Dani, for having me on your podcast. Yeah, so I'm Lucy. I'm 37 years old and I live in Wales in the United Kingdom with my husband and two children, so aged 4 and 2. And I'm currently pregnant with my third. We moved from London maybe like 3 years ago, and I work as a general practitioner doctor. So I guess in the US, is that like a family physician or a primary care
I think they
physician?
it might be your GP or
GP,
your primary care physician, but I don't know if I'm thinking of Australia or the US.
Like your family doctor. So I've been doing that for like the past decade.
Amazing. Okay. All right. And so where does your HA situation begin then? Like when did what's going on?
I don't really know. So I've never actually really had a formal diagnosis of HA. And like many women suffering with this, I think it was masked by the contraceptive pill for so many years. So I guess looking back, I started my periods when I was 14 and I went on the combined oral contraceptive pill aged like 16 to regulate my cycle. Which, as we know, that's not what it's for. But at the time, I liked it because I could, know when my period's coming. I could back to back my pill packets and I had no hormonal side effects. So I continued on this for a long period of time. And I guess, I wanted to get into medical school. So my teenage years were hardworking, grade A's, and you do all these extracurricular activities. And trying to socialize. So I was super busy. And then when I went to medical school, life didn't slow down. And I continued on the contraceptive pill and I continued working hard, going out loads and exercising with sports at this time. And it wasn't until my final year of medical school where I went on elective. I went to Tonga, which is like more, I guess, Australia way, like New
Yeah, I
Zealand.
know Tonga because yeah, we go to I went to school with a lot of Tongans.
Yeah, it's like the furthest you can go from the UK.
It's a
So
rare random place to go, but okay.
I know, I thought, well, when would I get the opportunity? So needless to say, I couldn't get a prescription. So I came off the pill and I, had a little backpack. So I went traveling afterwards with like tampons and pads and expecting a period that never came. So I guess possibly it had already started then. But of course, when I went back to the UK, saw my GP who said, well, the best thing you can do is go back on the pill and that will regulate your cycle. So back on the pill I went. So I suspect then in my early 20s was when HA started for me. But back on the contraceptive pill, carrying on, I moved to London. And a junior doctor, I think it's probably similar in the US and Australia. So it's quite intense. You do long hours, busy job, you do late shifts, night shifts. And I started, I think, focusing more, like rather than doing sport, because I didn't have the time to do that, I was doing more like exercise. So like I started loving like spin classes and weightlifting and high intensity training. And I would do this like before a super busy job or after or on my time off, back to back classes. So I guess I was starting to get addicted to that cortisol, that stress hormone. And it wasn't until, gosh, I had another break from the pill when my boyfriend, who's now my husband, so maybe I'm sort of like mid-20s, had a secondment in Russia. So he went to live in Russia for a period of time. And I thought, well, I don't need to be on the pill. Came off it. My skin flared up. I started to get spots around my mouth. So like, I guess, hormonal acne. And I didn't have a period for like 2 years. And I went to the GP and they did refer me for an ultrasound scan. And they said, oh, well, you've got polycystic ovarian syndrome. And now, you Danny, as you say, like you can't diagnose that from an ultrasound scan. And I guess I had a few spots and I had no periods. But I had no biochemical markers, so like no blood tests to support a diagnosis of polycystic ovarian syndrome. But they said, the GP said the best thing to do is to go back on the combined pill and come back to us when you want to have a baby. And I guess at this time I was a bit like, oh, that doesn't, it doesn't sit right. Like, what's going on? But equally, medicine is very hierarchical. And I'm currently like training to be a GP. I'm seeing a GP who's like so much more senior than me. Like, who am I to challenge the situation, I guess? Or, and at this point, I also had full faith in the medical system that like they get the diagnosis, they can treat you, I'll just do as I'm told. So I guess that was another moment that I could have realized, but anyway, I didn't. I went back on the pill, and when I, got married, hit 30, and then I like wanted a baby yesterday. Have you had that? Like, when you didn't yesterday, but now suddenly you really want a baby. So I was off the
That's our
contraceptive.
biggest problem, right? Is like people aren't in enough pain. I mean, from like a business perspective, doing this, people are not in enough pain with HA until they want to have a baby. And it's like, well, that's really kind of leaving it too late, right? Because now you're in pain instead of
For
resolving it
sure.
before you're in the pain. So yeah.
So education there, I guess, is like so important. Things that your society, like spreading the word. Because you don't realize until you're in that situation. So my GP referred me to a fertility clinic. And I guess that is when a whole catalog of like mismanagement started. So I went to a fertility clinic with, blood tests that showed low estrogen, low progesterone, low LH, low FSH, like normal testosterone. So there was nothing, it was all very HA. And I was about maybe like 49, 50 kilograms, 5'3". So I had like a normal BMI, but was super lean. They said, you've got PCOS. And I said, well, have I? And they were like, well, yeah, you've got lean PCOS. And the registrar who I saw was like, it's okay, because we're going to give you Clomid, or Clomid, however you pronounce it. So, which is a medicine that tries to force ovulation, so the release of an egg. And as you know, Danny, it also reduces your estrogen and reduces the lining of your womb, your uterine lining. My estrogen's already super low. My lining of the womb is really thin. So I went on this, and I didn't just do one cycle. I did six cycles back to back. And at one
That's a
point, they
lot.
checked.
Usually
I
they
know.
stop you at like
I know,
three.
it's mad. And she kept saying, oh, this might be the one. And in hindsight, being a glorious thing, it definitely wasn't going to be the one, because whenever, if I had had a progesterone blood test, it was always less than one. So whether I was ovulating, probably not. And even if I was ovulating, that poor egg, like, where's it going to go? Like, into the abyss of, a thin uterine lining with no hormonal support. So I did that. And, from a lifestyle perspective, I'm probably still like under fueling, because I don't think I touched on that, but I never like did macro counting or anything like that. But I certainly wasn't aware of protein, and for the amount of exercise I was doing, I wasn't eating the right diet. And being an 80s baby, that mindset of like low carb, low fat, eat smaller portions than men, it's just an inbuilt way of thinking. So that was me. And after I unsuccessfully, needless to say, finished these Clomid cycles, they referred me to a private IVF clinic in London. Cynically, the consultant who I never saw on the NHS owns these clinics. And I embarked on IVF. So I embarked on my history of 10 rounds of IVF now.
Wow.
So
Okay. And out of 10 rounds, how many successful rounds did you have? Yeah.
two.
You have two
And you know,
babies.
that's a miracle as well, Danny, because no one was like shocked. So basically, because of my like size, they were like, oh, you don't need very strong medication. And then they were like, oh, actually you do, because you're not responding. So at one point, I'm on 100 microgram patch of estrogen. And for to put that in context, like if you're in menopause and you're having hormone replacement therapy, like 100 microgram patch is really high dose. And in addition to that, I'm on like 2 milligram tablets of estrogen 4 times a day. So I'm on really high dose of medication. And I guess that's probably because the Clomid had thinned my lining, and I had no estrogen. So they were having such a hard time building up that lining for the IVF to have a little impact. But anyway, I had my first miracle baby, April 2019. I managed to conceive, and as an embryo, my lining was only 6.3 millimeters, and it should be like between 9 to 14.
Yeah. Like, any thoughts on why the successful ones were successful, or just totally random?
So, definitely, I had nothing. The fertility clinic hadn't said anything holistically. Do you know what I mean? There was nothing other than once you've had a transfer, don't hold a hot water bottle, you know, that kind of thing. But from word of mouth, I had reduced my work a little bit. And I'd stopped doing such intense exercise and started just doing like dog walks. So I was making some changes, be them very small and only during like transfers. But yes, for my daughter, I definitely had made a few changes lifestyle wise, in addition to the sort of high doses of medication that they gave me. And you know, pregnancy was uncomplicated. The postpartum period, I managed to breastfeed. That was all fine. And then it got to maybe a year, and I thought, oh, I'd like to have a sibling, you know, another child for a sibling for her. And when I, interestingly, when I went back to the fertility clinic, I did respond better. And whether that's because I was further away from the Clomid treatment, so my lining of the womb had a bit of time to recover, but also possibly I hadn't gone back to the intense exercise, or most probably hadn't, you know, so I did respond better, but it still failed the first time. And the second time was successful. So that was in 2021. And that's my son, who's now two. And then I think it got to like a year postpartum with him, and I was thinking, you know, like the implications of not having a period. That's when, you know, I started. Before, it was like the implications were just like, I want to have a baby, and now it was like, oh, what about bone health, and you know, you have estrogen receptors all over the body, what about dementia risk and cardiovascular disease and all of these wider things. So I started thinking about that. And also I started looking at photos and being like, God, I'm like really bony on my chest and a bit gaunt and tired. And I stumbled across your website. Thank you. So I started thinking, do I have something else? I went to the GP, got bloods. I think at this point my estrogen was like 87. So, you know, not hugely low, but like not high enough, right, to ovulate, not high, you know, I'm still in that menopausal range.
Yeah, and it's also like sometimes a bit too high to get the diagnosis as well.
Yeah, and I went to see a private gynecologist because I couldn't get referred on the NHS, and she did a scan, and she was like, and I said to her, you know, do I have, you know, polycystic ovarian syndrome, or do you think it could be like HA or combination? And she was like, oh no, you've definitely got lean PCOS. And she actually was like quite like annoyed about me challenging her, and she said, you've got two options. You either go onto the combined oral contraceptive pill again, or you take hormone replacement therapy. I was like,
Ooh, two options.
I know. I was like, well, neither of those sit well with me. I really don't want to go back on the combined contraceptive pill. You know, and I'm not in the menopause, so why do I need HRT? So anyway, I went away, and I think then I started to get like angry, you know, which is good because then you start doing your own thing, researching. But I still had two frozen embryos, so I did go back to the fertility clinic. They both failed. And I think then we got to March, and I just realized things had to change. And I had this moment, you know, I don't know whether it's you or Ashley, Danny, you talk about this kind of like moment of surrender, you know, where I'd started making some changes, like I mentioned, with, you know, not doing such intense exercise. And I'd also started having like more like protein rich breakfasts, but I hadn't like fully surrendered to the process because I wasn't 100% sure. So I think I had this moment where I was like in a petrol station, you're like late from work. The NHS, I mean, GP, I don't know what it's like in the States, but it's, you know, underfunded, overworked. It's like a horribly stressful environment for me. I was late home from work, missed bedtime. And I had this moment where I was like, oh God. And I bought a packet of Maltesers. Do you know, like a chocolatey treat, which is like, so this is where you kind of do look back, you think, God, I had controlled myself, because I would never have done that, you know, with like out feeling guilty or whatever. So basically it was my moment to like eat the damn cookie. Do you know what I mean? So so that's when things like really changed. And I then opportunistically got an email from you about like early bird access to the hypothalamic amenorrhea practitioner course. And I think I emailed you and I was like, do you know what? I'm not fully recovered. personally, at that time, I wasn't even 100% sure whether I had, you know, I was still in that, oh, I've got PCOS phase. And you said, well, you know, do it because you can recover during it, and you just wouldn't recommend seeing clients or anything afterwards if you hadn't recovered. So I also, I guess now we're kind of addressing stress, you know, like the hormone cortisol, which suppresses your reproductive system. So I also then thought, I need to reduce my work. And I think also that was another podcast from you, Danny, and you'd said, like, if you're in a stressful job and you're not recovered and you don't need to be, like, why are you still doing it? So, yeah.
Yeah.
Wise words.
Well, because it is hard, like, your first initial response to that can be like, well, you know, I'm not going to say no to, like, my career and my dreams and things just because like it's not fair, you know, like it's not fair. I should get to do all of those things. But I don't know, I lean more sometimes these days into questioning, like, do you have to say no to some things if you want to be truly healthy? And
yeah,
so that might be like not running marathons and being a emergency room surgeon, like all at the same time, or so, you know, like some people are just really mixing a lot of really high stress things that might just not be practical. And how can we? Okay, so what did you change exactly? What did you end up doing?
So in terms of like stress, I like reduce work. And I started doing some like deeper work. So I started like journaling in the evening, like trying to kind of like, I guess, improve my window of tolerance, you know, to get me more in that sort of rest and nurture, you know, the parasympathetic state. And, you know, little things like when I'm not working, I put my toddler to bed, nap, and I sit on the sofa, you know, and like maybe like watch TV, like I would always be like, you don't watch TV in the daytime. Like, who says you can't watch TV in the daytime? You know, so I would just start maybe changing that mindset. So a bit more in that sort of relaxation, trying to reduce stress, doing a bit more breath work, diet. You know, in hindsight, like I said, I was definitely unaware, but probably controlling, you know, just sticking to like low carb and low fat as you can. So I'd already made a few changes, but I decided to go all in. So I started having, rather than fasting, we'd tend to have like an early-ish dinner if I got home when I wasn't working, and then fast. I started eating like Greek yogurts, you know, pots like that with all the toppings in the evening, and then eating within an hour of waking. And then I added in some snacks. And do you know what? It was really, I was like, I just, the weight gain, I didn't gain any weight for ages. And I was thinking, when am I going to start gaining some weight? Because from your teaching, you know, you need some fat for your leptin to increase your estrogen. So I'm kind of like waiting for this to happen. And I think I went from like 49, 50 kilograms to about 54 kilograms. But, you know, it wasn't obvious. I think I looked better, like much better. And you know, I couldn't fit into my like favorite pair of jeans, but I could fit into all my other clothes. So that was, I guess, addressing diet. And then what was the other one? So exercise, I still wasn't doing intense exercise, but I changed my mindset in that I was more, if I went for a walk with my toddler, you know, we'd go for a dog walk. And if she...
Hey, are you trying to recover and maybe even fall pregnant naturally? I thought that might be you. And if so, we have created our best ever yet resource for you. Totally free. This is a masterclass. I've called it my masterclass because I have put everything into this, right? This masterclass is designed for you if you have HA or have had HA and are dealing with suboptimal cycles, and you're serious about restoring those babies to full optimization, and you want to create the ideal foundation for a pregnancy, this is going to be for you. So, in this masterclass, I'm going to provide you a lot of things, including a lot of case studies, mine, Ashley's and Mishi's, as well as lots of our past clients and what their challenges were and what they had to do to overcome it. And we cover a really wide variety of types of cases of HA. So everything from primary amenorrhea and missing periods for years and years to short-term amenorrhea and what we did to handle that situation as well, and how long it took these people to go from HA to pregnant with this system, and how long it took them to go from HA to ovulating, of course, with this system. So lots of information, lots of case studies, lots of stats. We go through why this is not a weight gain plan and how we actually divide you into phases, the three phases of HA, and determine what your starting point is so that you have a good idea of where you need to start with your actual changes in lifestyle and nutrition changes. We even cover questions like HA and people with a normal BMI and recovery for people who have had HA for too long. There's so much in this 60-minute masterclass. Y'all, I'm impressed. And at the end, I'll also be running you through how to get a free HTMA, hair tissue mineral analysis, through us, which is a part of our process for recovery and preconception clients that we're happily going to give you for free $99 as a massive thank you, of course, for joining the masterclass. So go to thehasociety.com/masterclass or head to our website and you'll find a link for it and find when the next available presentation is going to be. That's thehasociety.com/masterclass.
She wanted to do a small walk. That was fine. And just changing that mindset. So I didn't then like restrict food or exercise more the next day, for example. So I just had a slower approach to life, I guess. Which is what we were saying. So I had a slower approach and increased, resolved, hopefully, my energy deficit. And I started seeing cervical mucus and I was already checking my basal body temperatures. And I think I had my first period, my first natural period since I was 16 years old in like the first week in May. And that was all, you know, thanks to what you and Ashley taught me, you know, from that sort of holistic point of view. And then I thought, well, we may as well try. So in hindsight, when I look at my Kindara app, like I had a temperature rise on like day 13. And I had like one drop of blood on like day 24 or something. And I was like, oh, my period's going to start again. And then day 28, I still had a temperature rise. So I did a pregnancy test. And I don't know if you've been through this, but, you know, anyone who's done a lot of fertility, had a lot of fertility trauma in the past, like doing a pregnancy test is horrible, you know. And so I did it and I just left it in the bathroom and I distracted myself with the children, went back when it was too late and was like, oh, it's an evaporation line. Put it in the bin, went to work. And then my husband took it out the bin and was like, texted me being like, it looks like kind of colored. Like, are you sure it's an evaporation line? And I was like, I am the doctor. I'm telling you.
Evaporation line, meaning you feel like you left it so long and then basically like the test just now.
Yeah. And then you get this like clear colorless line and it's like, you know, cause you've left it out. So that I just said it was, you know, I just thought it was that. And I think even in my, you know, like that evening in my journal, I was like reflecting, being like, oh, the mind is so cruel. I've had all these, like, I felt sick all day, like all these pregnancy symptoms. And then my husband's like, you have to do another test. And I did another test the next day. And, you know, it was like obviously positive. And so here we are. And now I'm 23 weeks pregnant with my third child, but my first natural conception. So, you know, well, it's you and Ashley that I have to thank for that, because I wouldn't have got here without.
That's so cool. That makes everything worth it. What was that like to stare at it? I assume you were with your husband.
He actually works away. He works in London still, because that's where we moved from in the week. So I just like texted him a picture the next day being like, oh yeah, maybe you were right.
Just like super casual about it. Just like classic like British people.
I know. Well, I think he was hoping it might take a little bit longer from a selfish perspective, because finally, you know, I had a bit of libido back like that, you know, with all this estrogen. So he was probably a bit like, damn.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the second trimester libido is generally pretty legit.
Yeah, exactly. So he's got you should that, be grateful.
I could just imagine just be standing at it, staring at it, being like, you know, like your brain trying to compute like everything you've done in the past 10 years and like you had, you know, quote, had to do IVF.
Yeah, I know. And it's horrible to think, you know, when you think back, you think, oh my God, like, what did I do to myself? But, you know, you got to have a bit of compassion, I guess. Like, you know, I've had two children out of it. And would I have changed things? Yes. If I had the knowledge now, like totally. Am I more like, you know, I think education, like we were saying at the beginning, is so important because when I was 16, there was definitely not an informed decision to go on the contraceptive pill. You know, I don't quite know why we're not teaching it at, you know, at school. You think, oh my goodness, I could get pregnant any day of the 28 days or however long your cycle is, don't you? So yes. I think in our Western society, that sort of education for women, and also just teaching us to like, and men, to respect the feminine body, isn't it? You know, we're not small men. We're actually a much more sophisticated system with more hormones and, you know, designed for two things, to survive and to produce offspring, where they just have one, which is just survive.
Yeah. So. Just like, that's like the thing that we need to be. Yeah. It's truly mind-boggling to me too that I'm starting to believe that fertility being truly, truly broken is more rare than we're thinking it is. Because there's a lot of awareness right now about like infertility. It happens to all these women, which is true. And many, many, many of them are not just dealing with HA. I'm not thinking, oh, 90% of them just have HA. I don't think that's the case. But I do think that many people are joining the I have infertility category or label really, really soon. And doctors are giving them that label when we're starting to see more and more all the ways that we can naturally reverse quite a number of different issues, or at least naturally support our body to have better chances. And yeah, I just think like true unexplained fertility is more uncommon than
I know. I 100% agree. I think, you know, we're so sort of dysregulated often and not like maybe in rhythm with our own bodies because of things like the contraceptive pill and, I don't know, antidepressant medication and diet culture and all of that. So it stops us from being really in tune with our bodies. And yeah, so I think education, I also think there's like this sort of hole, isn't there? You see your like family doctor and you say you're struggling to conceive and they have like a small window of time to say, to do a blood test, or, you know, there's no time for that sort of holistic and functional assessment. And then you just get referred on to a fertility clinic if you've hit the duration of time that you're meant to have had a baby by.
This is an interesting question. Let me ask you this just because you are a GP. When I do our new client intakes, right? So we have this intake form and it is quite a few pages. But at this point, I'm quite quick at like what are the first sections I look at and then work backwards from there to determine like, you know, if someone seems like a more complex case or a more simple case. But I've gotten to the point where it does not take me long to go through someone's intake form, looking at the main information, then we get on a call and within the first 20 minutes I've asked all the questions like that intrigued me that came up from the intake form, and we've got some action steps and it's rather clear. Now maybe it's because I'm already coming in with the context of HA, and that person has already done their own research, because otherwise why would they be here on this call with me? But like, there's a part of me that thinks we can review this in, you know, like with the right questions being asked on a survey up front or something like that. I feel like it could be tackled in a regular GP call. Obviously, a lot of education on both sides like needs to be done. But I don't know if doctors were like, what are you eating and how frequently you were, eating and all of that kind of thing, but then also understood that that's not, like, the little amount of food they're eating is not a good thing, which often they're getting applauded for the small amount of food that they're eating. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, 100%. But I think there's so much, there's a lack of awareness. And I think it's not something, like, I've done a diploma in sexual health and family planning, and which did not, you know, it covers the contraceptive pill. It doesn't cover anything about, you know, from a more holistic point of view, how the contraceptive pill, you know, can reduce your gut microbiome, reduce your mineral status, you know, all of that sort of stuff. You're just taught how it works and why it's good. And so I think there's a huge lack of education for doctors about hypothalamic amenorrhea. Like, you know, I just saw a private gynecologist last year who was like, you know, of course it's not hypothalamic amenorrhea, you know, there's a huge, you know, I guess we like to kind of see something, like with PCOS, you can kind of see that polycystic ovarian morphology, and then there's like a treatment. I think medicine is primed to diagnose and treat, you know, not, it's a very new thing, everything more from a sort of holistic and functional point of view. And preventative medicine, there's not so much time in the NHS for preventative medicine, for all types of things. You know, even if someone wants to come in with mental health problems, you tend to give them a medication, right? Which might not be the best thing for everybody, because there's no time to, you know, go on a waiting list to see a therapist. Or so I guess it's the same sort of thing. And it's the, maybe the lack of awareness from the doctor perspective of not asking possibly the right questions, not thinking about more of that sort of biopsychosocial, and then not having the education to, or the confidence to not prescribe, you know, the confidence to do more of a lifestyle advice rather than here's a contraceptive pill.
Yeah. Yeah. It makes me really appreciate the doctor I had when I was probably 19 or 20. Back home, and I tell this in my story too, I think, like, I went and I told him everything that was going on, just like basically just that my period was missing, and I didn't really know why. I think in my memory that's why I was there, but it definitely didn't. And then he started asking me, like, about my life, and I was definitely 22 because I had my business, and he didn't prescribe me anything. He talked to me about how can I take a vacation.
Great.
My own business, and I was working like 7 days a week, and also training to be a weightlifter, and then just was doing it all at the same time. And I was like, I can't, it's my business, I don't have anyone. He's like, are you sure, like, there's not someone that you could trust? And he, like, convinced me that I could figure it out. And he gave me a hug. And while that wasn't the moment for me that changed everything, he still didn't explain to me any of it. But I did take his advice, and I did take a vacation.
Good.
I see later in hindsight what he was alluding to. And they're definitely out there. Because he didn't send me the pill or anything. He didn't even give me the progesterone challenge.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, for sure. I mean, there's definitely, you know, some of us, but it takes longer. You know, in the UK, we have like a 10-minute consultation, and it's, you know, everyone will come in with more things, and, you know, there's not the time, there's not the capacity, I guess. So that would be amazing if everyone could do that and look into more of the lifestyle and the reasoning behind. But I think
this is why we just need an army of people in between, right? In between the doctor and a person. And, you know, for us right now, we're who you go to after you've seen a doctor already, because that's just the culture. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I think we can get there, that people will slowly, maybe it's the next generation, I don't know, start seeing more of these, like, holistic health coaches for these types of, like, foundational things.
Mm-hmm.
And then they go to the doctor when it's at the, hey, I need, like, a medical treatment level of severe. Mm-hmm. And so it's like there's two types of practitioners, and there's, you know, our people who help us learn how to just, like, live live, right?
Yeah.
And then there's our practitioners who provide medicine when things are starting to become out of our control. And we
yeah.
just don't have that middleman, and everyone wants us, you know, see your doctor before starting a new exercise regime. Mm-hmm. Like, what is, you know,
okay.
they probably don't have any advice for you yeah. in a 10-minute consult.
Mm-hmm.
So that, I mean, I imagine like lightening the load on
yeah.
the medical system by having more people go through other types
mm.
of practitioners could also be nice.
Yeah, definitely. Because in our sort of Western, like fast-paced world, you know, I think we need to take a little step back. Otherwise, you know, this dysregulation causes these problems. So we do need to be more in tune. And I also think, you know, in secondary care, when you get referred on, like maybe a fertility clinic shouldn't be called a fertility clinic, you know, because it's not really helping you become fertile. It's just
bypassing it.
Yeah, it's just like giving you medication. To, do you know what I mean? There's nothing, it's not helping your long-term health. I think we're forgetting that fertility doesn't just have to lead to a baby, you know, it's for your your optimum hormonal health. Because for sure, when my estrogen was going up, I felt like a new person, like so much better. So I think it would be nice if everybody could have that.
yeah. Things to think about. I have a lot of hope. I have a lot of hope for the world. Because it's like one of the good things that the internet and social media has done for people is create so much awareness about this kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. So, oh, yeah. So absolutely. You're not just seeing sort of skinny models anymore and like when we did when we were younger.
I mean, turns out that is out there. I feel like we're in our bubble now with the things that we talk about and do and are interested in. And randomly out of nowhere, I actually started getting fed some of that. Like,
oh, really? Oh, that's so worrying, isn't it? I mean, have you got a daughter? Have you?
I have a 3-year-old.
Yeah, because I always think about that, like the I want her to be more informed, you know. You need to we didn't have the access that they could have when they're teenagers.
Yeah, they just need the diversity, right? Because like you said, being an 80s baby, so like I grew up in the 90s as well. And yeah, it was all the same type of girl on cover of every magazine. On MTV, on the runway, it was like this one very specific look. But now, you know, there are lots of different types of bodies that are being presented. And while it's still not perfect, because it's like, hey, these are various acceptable bodies, like before there's a bit more variation, it's not perfect, but I can see it kind of moving more in the direction
of
a healthier place to be.
Hopefully. I mean, did you see on the Victoria's Secret runway or whatever, like Kate Moss is back, and she was obviously from that era where, you know, stick thin and all of that. And now she's back and she's like 50 or something. And everyone's like, oh, she had a little bit of a tummy pouch. And it's like, oh my God, like finally, like she's a little bit maybe more true to herself. And
yeah. Oh, I saw it also Tyra Banks was on it and people were giving hate because primarily because of everything she had, people were more like angry about the feedback and advice and things she had said to women on America's Next Top Model.
Oh yeah,
she has, you know, quote, the audacity to go out on the runway in a bigger normal body. Like she definitely doesn't look like a, you know, the original Tyra Banks model, and she with the models in that show. And so then people were just confused, like, you know, why are you allowed on here and these girls aren't, you know, just kind of calling out.
Critical.
I don't know how I feel about it yet. I only saw it this morning.
Yeah. Oh, I didn't see her. But then you had like, I think it was like Ashley Graham, is it? You know, the sort of larger size, you know, larger, but like more normal. So
size normal, whatever. Yeah.
So anyway, maybe there's hope for the next generation.
Raise it. But I know, or things just go in cycles and it'll come back. Like, I don't know.
But I guess that it goes back to then education, because I think if when I was a teenager, if you had been kind of informed and maybe had a, you know, consultation with a physician who told you about the importance of hormones and diet and, you know, from that more holistic point of view, then that's definitely, you know, you have a bit more autonomy to make your own decision rather than being so hugely influenced by external sources.
Yeah. I mean, if you're going to choose to do it anyway, great. At least you made that decision for yourself.
Exactly. At least you're making it in an informed way, and you know the consequences.
Yeah. No, exactly.
Yeah.
Well, Lucy, this was really great. I really enjoyed hearing your story and everything that came along with it. And I'm glad Thank that you. Out of it, you get to have your family of three, whichever way.
You know, whichever way it has happened.
So cool. Congratulations.
And well, thank you.
About the gender, do you know what you're doing?
So I've got a girl and a boy, and it's another girl. So girl, boy, girl. So my little boy is going to be sandwiched in all that estrogen. Yeah.
Okay. He was the youngest for a while, I guess.
Yeah. And he'll be like the only boy. So I'm sure he'll love it. He's you know, he's so more dependent on me. So I'm sure his baby sister is going to be feeding him. Pushing him around in the buggy, so we will see. But yeah, no, I just have huge thanks for you and Ashley for helping me get to this point. So
well,
it's amazing
you
what you guys do.
We will accept that praise and fuel for the rest of the year on it, I think.
Yeah.
So thank you so much. I hope you enjoy the rest of your day. Everybody else, I hope you enjoy yours, and we'll see you guys next week for another episode. Bye.
Hey there, it's me, Danny, and I want to tell you about Temp Drop as a fertility awareness method tracking option. So many of you guys know that we actually recommend the fertility awareness method both as you're going through recovery and 100% after you have gotten some cycles back and you're starting to move forward for the rest of your reproductive years. So Temp Drop itself is a wearable fertility monitor, and we love it. It's a wearable device, so you put it around your arm and you can use that instead of taking your temperature manually with a thermometer each morning. So I'm personally a big fan of the manual tracking. All of us at the HA Society are, and that's the method that we use, you know, just using a good old thermometer. We use that with our clients because it's the best way to use it as a diagnostic tool, as a practitioner. And it's also the best way to ensure if you're trying to avoid pregnancy that you don't get pregnant. However, manual temping for many reasons is just not always an option. When you're in the middle of recovery, again, we do recommend manual temping, but once you're cycling, the Temp Drop is actually a really great hack. So it gives you basically everything you need to effortlessly track your fertility status, like where you are in your monthly cycle. So you wear the Temp Drop sensor while you're sleeping for accurate basal body temperature readings without the stress of early morning wake-ups. So I personally love this because with a toddler, my wake-up times are all over the place, and the occasional sleep disruptions make using an oral thermometer a lot more difficult. So Temp Drop's accompanying charting app enables you to track an array of symptoms alongside your basal body temperature. This includes tracking your cervical mucus if you've been using OPKs, and then it also gives you sleep insights too. So you can combine these fertility signs all in one place, and that will help you identify your fertile window, confirm ovulation, plan for your period, and if you're trying to get pregnant, you know, identify whether or not you are pregnant. So whether you're trying to conceive or avoiding pregnancy, or you want to chart for health reasons, like HA recovery, making sure your cycle's not slipping back in the HA direction, Temp Drop makes fertility awareness accessible to all women, even if you don't have regular cycles or sleeping patterns. So track your ovulation in real time with the Temp Drop, and we are lucky enough to have a 15% off code. So if you go to their website, they're usually having a sale, but you can stack this code on top of the existing code. So just go to tempdrop.thehasociety.com and use the code AFHASociety. I think too, if you just go to tempdrop.com and use AFHASociety at the checkout, that will work too. So happy temping and good luck.
This episode is brought to you by Grassland Nutrition Beef Liver Capsules. Did you know that in terms of nutrient density, beef liver actually blows vegetables and fruits out of the water? If you're a client of mine, you have already been instructed to eat beef liver either fresh or in capsule form. I recommend it for anyone and everyone who is, of course, dealing with amenorrhea and fertility challenges out there, but I may even recommend it for just everyone in general. Get your husbands on it, get your partners on it. If you have a history of HA and add on top of that maybe a history of the pill, maybe you've been pregnant before, you know, through treatments or other, like you've just, your body's been through anything, you know, you're absolutely 100% dealing with a nutrient deficiency of some kind. And while it's true that testing is going to be the best way to understand those exact deficiencies, eating nutrient-dense, real food is going to be one of the most important next steps that you take with or without testing. So I've been using and recommending Grassland Nutrition Beef Liver Capsules for years now. And the capsule form makes it so easy to get your liver in every day. And I appreciate the transparency of this product in particular above others. So in case you're wondering, it's completely natural. This is freeze-dried beef liver in capsules. It's organic. It's made from Australian beef. And my favorite of their products is the liver with kelp because of the iodine from the kelp, which is important for overall thyroid function, which is often low in women with underperforming hormones. So rather than eat seaweed snacks every day, I get to take this beef liver with the kelp for my iodine. So if you're recovering or working on a fertility journey right now, do not skimp the nutrient rich source of beef liver. Get 10% off your order with the HA Society and support your favorite podcast along the way. They ship to most countries, so you should be covered. Just go to grasslandnutrition.net and use HA Society, just HA Society, at the checkout for the 10% off. That's grasslandnutrition.net with the code HA Society.
Thank you so much for listening today, guys. Please subscribe to the podcast, and if you could head to iTunes specifically and leave a rating or review, that would help so much because it makes it easier for other people with HA who are Googling around to find the podcast really easily. So if you do that, you're doing a service to all of the women.
Kelly Clarkson here to let y'all know that it's the holidays at Wayfair. No matter your space, style, or budget, shop Wayfair.com to get your home holiday ready.
Wayfair, every style, every home.